protect yourself and others. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, March 31st, 2022. On tonight's show, I meet a Francophone director eager to bring his sci-fi adaptation to an English audience, and two choreographers who see their audiences as witnesses and participants in their art. My guests tonight meet Kayan Quealy, the founder of Montreal's own stepping troupe, and how the rhythmic dance form was born through the fight for freedom and community.
I thought it was so fascinating, I thought it was so interesting what they were doing, the rhythms they were creating. And then I said, I want to learn. I joined the team. I joined the choir. I would go on to take over the step team. One thing I focus on all the time is that I didn't realize that stepping would have connected me to part of my ancestors' history, part of my history that I was not aware of.
Another dance master, choreographer Sashar Zarif, brings his new show Kismet to the Mai.
When we have limitations, we just use creativity as a tool, as a catalyst, but not as an approach to find our way. Our way will be revealed through intuitive self-discovery and inwardness and outwardness at the same time.
And director and designer Cédric Delhomme-Bouchard on bringing a sci-fi novel set on a spaceship to the stage.
Science fiction is often used in the cinema, TV series, but it's not often that we start from those kind of literature to create theater or dance project. It's really an unusual choice.
A very big thank you to everyone who contributed to CKUT's funding drive. It wrapped up on Sunday. Thank you if you contributed to Upstage's personal fundraising goal. I'll be getting in touch with you to let you know about how you can collect your prize. And thank you so much to the theaters who contributed something as a special incentive to raise money for Upstage and CKUT, Mainline Theater and the Montreal Saint-Ambroise Fringe Festival, Centaur Theater, Siegel Center, and Infinite Theater. Oh, by the way, we're going to be covering all the shows they've donated tickets to in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned. On with our show. Kayan Quealy was born in St. Kitts and Nevis in the Caribbean, and while he was studying in the U.S., he discovered an art form, a form of percussive dancing known as stepping. In it, the body becomes an instrument to create sound and rhythm. Rooted within the African-American fraternities and sororities in the U.S., it draws on African traditions on storytelling and call and response. The performances are energizing and mesmerizing, and as Kayan soon learned, as much about community and pride as performance. As Kayan will further explain, his life soon brought him to Montreal, where he founded Montreal Steppers just 3 years ago, building off an existing cornerstone Afro-Canadian group in Montreal. And the troupe brings their work not only to the community, but to students of all levels from elementary to university. This weekend, Montreal Steppers is presenting a new show, The Route to Canada, at the Siegel Center. There are two performances on Saturday, 4 and 8 p.m., and I'm giving away tickets for both performances. Please email me your time preference, your name, and your phone number at Upstage at CKUT.ca by 10 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, April 1st, and I will confirm if you've won your tickets by end of day. Kayan Quealy wrote The Route to Canada. He is the founder and the director of Montreal Steppers. I spoke with him earlier this week. Welcome, Kayan, to Upstage. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here with you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about our upcoming show.
Tell me about your journey to stepping. How did you come to this dance form?
Well, I'm going to go back to when I was in university. So I left St. Kitts when I was 22. I was born and raised in the Federation of St. Kitts Nevis, which is in the Caribbean, beautiful island. And I went to school in upstate New York, so just in Plattsburgh, which is across the border from Canada. And while I was in university, I saw a gospel choir group, and that was the Plattsburgh State Gospel Choir, and they had a step team. So while attending the concert, the choir sang, and then the step team stepped and they performed. I had seen stepped on television before, different movies, Stomp the Yard and different things, but it was my first time pretty much seeing it like live and up close. I thought it was so fascinating. I thought it was so interesting what they were doing, the rhythms they were creating. And then I said, I want to learn. I joined the team. I joined the choir. I would go on to take over the step team. One thing I focus on all the time is that I didn't realize that stepping would have connected me to part of my ancestors' history, part of my history that I was not aware of. And that's how I got into it. So since, just to put dates in all of this, this was in 2008 when I joined the step team, and then I was stepping up until 2013 in Plattsburgh. I came to Montreal in 2014, and then I was doing a little bit of stepping on and off. I thought it might be interesting to reintegrate step into my life, and I was volunteering at a high school, and the principal provided an opportunity for me to teach the high schoolers a routine. We did the routine. We did it at Vanier in the auditorium for a parents and children fundraiser event for the school. Everyone really loved it. Super fascinating. And then the principal was just like, this is very impressive. I think you could explore ways in which you can use the art form to teach and educate. And I had done that a little bit in Plattsburgh, but that was the first time I think it kind of cemented in my mind what I could potentially do. So.
And I'm curious, had you had a performance background before you came to college and had this encounter seeing the Plattsburgh stepping crew?
No.
Wow. And so you saw the show and you joined a gospel choir and you joined a stepping group.
Yeah. I would say no. I growing up in the Caribbean, I mostly was active in church and different take opportunities to take the stage or say a little poetry or sing a little song. But to concept up, to put that in the context of like performance, I wouldn't. So it's actually fascinating. As you ask me that question, I'm just like, oh no, no, I didn't. And here I am just doing many of the things.
So not a trained performer per se, but someone who's used to being in front of people and also someone used to being in community and doing community organizing. But to me, that's also just so remarkable. And I think it's also testament to what it is to be involved in community arts, is that you can, pardon the pun, step up and get involved the way you have. Because you went from seeing a show, getting involved, and then moving countries and starting your own organization within a timeline of a couple of years, as you just explained. So tell us more about your history. You end up coming to Montreal from Plattsburgh. I'm sure you had a lovely time in Plattsburgh, but Canada, yeah. Montreal beckoned for family reasons.
Absolutely. So while in university, an incredible time at Plattsburgh, honestly. Some of my lifelong friends, incredible connections with professors, mentors, their families, love them to death. But while I was there, I was studying. I had a great time, but I met my wife. I was a part of the Plattsburgh State Gospel Choir. She came from Montreal with her family background in music and singing and performance and church, and she was looking for a choir. Saw the Plattsburgh State Gospel Choir, joined, boom. We are connected in 2010, the history unravels, we engage, we get married in 2014, we move to Montreal, and my wife had moved back to Montreal in 2013 while we were engaged. And she joins the Montreal Gospel Choir. And when I come to Montreal in 2014, I also joined the Montreal Gospel Choir. And the Montreal Gospel Choir, incredible group of people and supportive team. This makes up a majority of the folks that are in Montreal Steppers. And it's been incredible support from the Montreal Gospel Choir director and the members. And we continue doing choir together as a unit and then branch out to forming Montreal Steppers.
So two organizations deeply enmeshed together. I'm speaking with Kyan Quealy, who is the director of Montreal Steppers? That's an important question I should have figured out before.
Oh, that's all good. I'm always kind of like taking steps back when those terms come up, but I'm the founder, I'm the director of Montreal Steppers.
You referred earlier to discovering this art form and realized it harkens back to the past, to your ancestry. So what does stepping represent to you and to so many Black people?
It's so hard to put into just a few words what the art form really represents. And I think if we look back at the history very quickly, we're looking at this art form that would have started in the early 1900s, really based in historically Black universities and colleges. So post slavery, where individuals were no longer enslaved. And this was a time period where they were building their own communities, pretty much starting from scratch, going to universities, establishing spaces in historically Black universities and colleges, and carving out areas for themselves where they can finally show their pride and their creativity and their resilience and explore their bodies to create something that never existed before. When individuals were taken from the continent of Africa through the Atlantic slave trade, they were bringing elements of dance, expressions, and movements. So many have said that there must have been strong ties with that, which is obvious. So some researchers have indicated that that art form would have been referred to as Juba, J-U-B-A. And that was stomping and hitting and moving and dancing, but not quite step. When we talk about stepping, that would have been birthed in the United States and really in the historically Black colleges and universities, where they really started to dive into community service, brotherhood, sisterhood, encouraging, supporting, lifting each other up. We're talking about establishing some of the first fraternities and sororities, Black fraternities and sororities, of course, that still have strong legacies that exist still today. Hundreds and thousands of Black men and Black women changing the world, really. So when I think about it, it's what a movement, what a way to use your bodies to tell your story as a means of social justice, as a means of resistance, as a means of expression. And stepping is so linked to what happened in 1739 in South Carolina, where there was the Stono Rebellion and they took away the use of the drums and instruments. And it gave way to people exploring and using their bodies even more to create, to express, to resist, because it was like, you're gonna take away the drum. And for individuals from the continent of Africa and African diaspora, the drum just didn't represent this instrument. You know, people in Africa explain the drum as having three spirits: the spirit of the animal whose skin is on the top of the drum, the spirit of the tree that is the body and base of the drum, and the spirit of the person who weaves that together. So it's not just this instrument. So when that was taken away, banned, it was this response to say, I will use my body now to continue telling my story. So when we do that, honestly, we're not even thinking about a performance per se. And that's my encouragement when folks come to the show on Saturday. We are coming to see a performance. We're performing for you. Fine. We get that. But it's beyond that. They weren't performing on the lights and in costumes and boots, and they were doing this for survival. So when we step on stage, it's this pride and representation of people who would have conquered and shared an incredible story. And we are so thrilled to step into that and be honored to share that.
And I'm thinking from the audience perspective, you're not just there to be entertained, but you're almost bearing witness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's so ingrained in Black art and culture is this aspect of participation and invitation, which makes it so unique. So we'll be there and encouraging people to clap, stomp, and move with us. I know we're still in COVID. People will have masks. So, I mean, it's a limit to how much you can do. But at the same time, it's just an invitation. So as you mentioned, it's really bearing witness, and we're incredibly proud to be on the stage showcasing this and telling a story and in our own way creating history and adding to justice and resistance and change.
That is the voice of Kayan Quealy, who is the founder of the Montreal Steppers, founded in 2019. It's now 2022. You've made immense progress with your organization the last couple of years. So does stepping have the same history in Canada, where you've chosen to make your home, the same kind of roots as you're describing to go centuries back in the U.S., and I assume also to perhaps a certain extent in the Caribbean, but you can correct me on that. So let's touch on that. But then I also want to touch on the story you're going to be telling this weekend, the route to Canada, and how you're using stepping as a form of storytelling.
So we had the privilege of connecting with the founding members of Step in Canada just a few weeks ago. We met a group of lovely people. I am going back to my conversation on CKUT with Kim years ago. Soul's Perspectives, and we had a conversation, an interview about our inaugural show, The Roots of Step, and he referenced being a part of Boots, the stepping group that existed in Montreal. So this February, we had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation, a Facebook Live event, and we spoke with individuals who pretty much birthed stepping in Canada. So when we talk about the history of step in Canada, we know that there's a connection because the United States, they are our neighbors. So many people would have seen and been experiencing elements of that explosion of STEP through seeing it at historically Black universities and colleges, seeing it on television. So when I spoke to Natasha Cleary, who in 1991 was going to Vanier College, saw stepping on A Different World, which most people saw, went to her administration and said, I want to bring this to Vanier. Got the green light, created a team called Vanier Stompers in 1991, performed at the basketball games, and continued making that movement and shaping the history. Shortly after, there was Chris Bennett, who was also there, and Natasha appointed Chris as a person who would take over Vanier Stompers, and Chris, with the permission of Natasha, says, I want to change the name. So we're going to change it to Boots, with a connection to gumboots in South Africa, which has a similar history to stepping, but expressions are a little bit different. And Boots will go on to have big boots, mini boots, boot boots, everybody. And just the response and the feedback from the Boots alumni on Facebook to us and the support they've given has been incredible. They built up a strong legacy, community, brotherhood, sisterhood that we still see exists. So they are the ones that actually started stepping in Canada, dating back to 1991. As we know that people were moving through migration from the United States, many people who would have been a part of colleges and universities and experiencing stepping would have also migrated to Canada. So you saw bits and pieces of it showing up. Doesn't carry that same specific history as you would see in the United States, because that was its experience there. But as we reflect on the origins here, very similar in college, starting and looking for ways to, and I'm quoting Natasha here, they just wanted to make noise. They just wanted to make some noise and support their people. And that's really how it started. And when we talk about the route to Canada, we are looking at bringing specific information, showcasing the journey of Black people to Canada. So we are using STEP as that way and means and method of doing it, but it's also integrated with storytelling and song. So it's STEP, storytelling, and song. But we're looking at this big question that people sometimes ask, that's really not a big question, but how did Black people get to Canada? And Canada has always had that reputation of we were the safe haven for people leaving the United States, which at one point, yes, but when we go back, people were extracted from the continent of Africa. They were also being brought to Canada as enslaved people. Canada, the United States, the Caribbean, South America. So Canada received their independence, well, not independence, sorry, the emancipation of slaves, and the abolition of slavery happened in 1834 in Canada and not till 1865 in the United States. So that gap allowed for the Underground Railroad. So when we examine the main question of the route to Canada, we're looking at how did people get to Canada? Slavery, the Underground Railroad, that's migration, and then immigration later on as more people from different parts of the world immigrated here.
It's a much richer and much more complicated story than I think people lead themselves to believe. And it's not the pure kind of fantastical concept of it either, that Canada was some sort of wondrous slavery-free destination, right?
That's it. And I think that's the important thing too. We're looking to shed more light on this important piece of history. And we are telling that story as well of just the creativity, the influence, and the pride of what needed to happen for these people to come here and not just survive, but thrive. And many of us are living out those realities, those dreams of what they would have been holding, their hopes for what people who would come after them, how they would live, the way they would navigate the world. When I do workshops in schools, I always say, I'm very thankful for my ancestors, my families, the people who have paved the way for me to walk through the world a little bit easier than they would have had. It's not the easiest, but it's easier than they would have had. And we're not just satisfied with it being easier. We want to continue pushing for progress and change.
Kayette, it's been such a joy to speak with you and to learn more about this art form as well as your work. I am so blown away by how closely knit this is, not just an artistic performance, but expression and community as well. So thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. It's been wonderful.
That was Kyan Quealy. He founded Montreal Steppers back in 2019. He directs the group today, and he also wrote their new show, The Road to Canada. It talks about the story of the African diaspora in this country. There are two performances this Saturday at 4 and 8 p.m. This is at the Siegel Center in Côte-des-Neiges. To learn more, visit the troupe at montrealsteppers.com. To book your tickets, visit siegelcenter.org. Or you can get your tickets courtesy of the Steppers. I'm giving away pairs of tickets for both performances. Please email me your time preference, 4 or 8 o'clock, name and phone number to upstage@ckut.ca by 10 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, April the 1st. I'll confirm if you've won by the end of day. I hope you jump at this chance. I know I would like to. Kyan was such a wonderful person to speak with, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I'm Sarah Day. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come on tonight's show, a director and designer sat down, opened a novel, a science fiction story set on a spaceship owned by a powerful corporation. And by page three, he knew he had to turn the employees into a stage play.
BTW and live theater is back. Black Theater Workshop and La Manufacture present Pipeline. We are back after 2 years with a dual-language presentation of the off-Broadway hit Pipeline by Dominique Morisseau, translation by Mishka Lavigne. Pipeline shares the story of Nia, a single mother and teacher dedicated to the success of her students and her teenage son Omari. Tensions are mounting at his school, and Nia must find a way to rediscover her connection with her son and his connection with himself. Pipeline will be presented at Théâtre La Licorne from April 12th to 23rd in English and April 26th to May 8th in French. For tickets, call 514-523-2246 or visit théâtrelalicorne.com. This is a Black Theatre Workshop production and a CKUT co-presentation.
My last guest, Kyan, spoke of the audience as a form of community of participation, not just passive appreciation. And so I was delighted and intrigued to speak the very next day with another dancer who feels much the same way. Sachar Zarif is a celebrated choreographer, researcher, and teacher. Originally from Iran, he came to Canada as a boy, and he started studying engineering. But a chance to return to his family in his homeland made him realize he wanted a different path in life. Sachar founded his Toronto-based dance company in 1994. The Sachar Zarif Dance Company specializes in Near Eastern and Central Asian dance styles and choreography, focusing also on Sufi and shamanic cultures. Sachar has traveled widely to study not just dance practices, but also the ideas of identity and cross-cultural pollination. His new show, Kismet, has just opened at the Mai. He is joined on stage by a quartet of dancers. The piece is inspired by rituals from Sufi and nomadic Islamic societies, and it questions how and whether we determine our own fates. This is followed by a solo by Sachar, Grandmother's Drum, where he uses an actual drum that belonged to his grandmother and her grandfather before. You'll find out more about that in our conversation, which I found enlightening. Here is my chat with Sachar Zarif from yesterday. Welcome, Sachar, to Upstage. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be heard by your audience.
From what I understand, identity and the idea of movement is really important to you. And you've traveled all over the world. I want to ask you about your travels, but you've met so many different kinds of people. And this theme of identity is a recurring one over the last 20 or so years of your company. Why are you so curious about people's identities and what shapes them?
Well, I believe that when we grow up, we learn to know where we come from or where we're going. We have to know, learn from our experiences and know where we want to go. And in between these, where we are and the moment, the living moment is pretty much compromised. So I always wanted to for a while, I wanted to understand who I am. And right now at the age of 53, I am actually happy to be a human in progress. I am fine with being on a journey. I believe now, after all these years, that what I was looking for doesn't exist. Their identity is not a product, is an ongoing negotiation of your relationship with yourself and whatever is out there that you relate to. So I was born into an immigrant family, and I went through through my early years. I went through the revolution and the war, fleeing the country and staying in refugee camps for 3 years and arriving to Canada about 30 something years ago. And so I am having all that luggage with me, and I had to know what to do with them. I wanted to be true to them. But I think most importantly here, I should actually tell you that what really ignite this idea of identity in me was my grandmother. I was left with my grandmother when my parents went to work, and she was about 99 years old, and she would sit on the ground on a little handmade carpet she brought with herself from her father's home from another country to Iran, from Azerbaijan. And she would sit on that carpet, and she would have a hand drum, her hand drum, and she would play the hand drum, tell the story, and sing and dance, and transform that little carpet to her father's home back where it was. So this, I was introduced to the idea of dance music and storytelling is a form of transformation, and it can help us transform ourselves to where we want to be. So when she passed away, I was 10, and I went through this turmoil in life and arrived to Canada. I brought her with me, her hand drum. I inherited her hand drum, and I played and sang and did the same rituals that I did with her to deal with my own migration, with my own longing, And so the time came that I realized that I really need to leave that carpet and meet the now and where I am. I mean, it was all fine what my grandmother gave me, and I appreciate it very much. But to stay there, to just live to preserve, it would be so sad. I need to find my own way in life, and I need to play my own song with those drums. So In our performance here, in Montreal, I do a solo called Grandmother's Drum, and I actually brought my grandmother's drum, which belongs to her mother, and it's over 100 and something years old, and I have it in a display so people can see it when they come in. I do a kind of a revisiting that world of my grandmother in my solo. And the group will be the way I have shared my experience, my body, mind, and emotional experience with other bodies, regardless of their cultural background. And I have been working with four very, very wonderful souls, generous, beautiful artists. They are very diverse in age and in their experience and in their gender. And I'm very excited to have it here, and I always wanted to share it with the audience in Montreal.
That is the voice of Sachar Zarif, who is bringing Kismet to the Mai. He's getting that opportunity to present to Montreal audiences. You are on a tour. You just performed in Ottawa or Toronto, and the next one is coming up after this tour in Montreal. What has the audience reaction been like so far for you?
Well, we have been very, very fortunate that Aga Khan Museum showed an interest to this work. And we performed it there for the Nowruz, the spring equinox celebration in Aga Khan Museum's beautiful amphitheater. And we had full houses for both days, and the audience were overwhelmingly supportive, touched. They had, it was very, very heartwarming for all of us to be received like that. And we are so excited about doing it here in May. May has been, especially Michael Topping, has been so supportive. I'm so grateful that his vision wanted to bring this work to Montreal, and he didn't give up through the 2 years of pandemic.
Yes.
Because we performed, we premiered Kismet in Dance Made in Canada in Toronto in 2019. And since then, we have been planning to do this. So May is a beautiful place with an amazing crew and staff and management. And we have had a very smooth run. And after these four performances, we are going to stop by Ottawa at the Arts Court and perform it there on April the 3rd at 4 p.m. And then we're off to Toronto, take some rest, and hopefully we'll be sharing this performance or ritual with others as well later.
Sachar, to hear you speak about your work and knowing that you're also a researcher and a teacher, you have such a complete absorption, like a way of speaking about this that is so interesting. Like, you just truly know your stuff, but you also sound very curious. Were you always going to be a dancer? Like, did you know from, you know, the time spent in the living room with your grandmother as a young child, did you know that this was what you had in store, or were you studying something else at some point?
Well, I loved dance and music and the drum. Eastern parents want their kids to be either a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer. So when I came here, alone, and I didn't want to disappoint my parents, whom I didn't meet for 13 years. So I was a good son. I went to high school and worked really hard and was accepted to the systems design engineering at Waterloo University. And I studied engineering. And after the deunification of Soviet Union in 1993, my parents went there to see the place that my grandmother was talking about all her life, you know, Baku, her home city. And I was dying to go back there. So I went. I went there and I stayed there, didn't come back for a while. And I did an intensive study of dance there. And then I came back here and I left engineering and I started dancing. But at least my parents are happy.
Well, I would say you have a Diamond Jubilee Medal from For the Queen. You have an honorary PhD or two, and you have your own dance company. So, I mean, at some point, they kind of came around, I guess.
Yes.
But you kind of, do you feel like you have like an engineer's approach to dance? Like kind of deconstructing things and seeing how things work. You're not just exploring storytelling, but really heady, complicated stuff like globalization and how people shape their identity.
I think that, things like engineering is quite creative. But what I have used from that is basically creativity. But what I am interested in dance and arts in general is that I don't really think that the foreground of your activity should be creativity. It should be intuition. I introduce my dancers to be intuitive, and I beg them not to be creative when they perform. When we have limitations, we just use creativity as a tool, as a catalyst, but not as an approach to find our way. Our way will be revealed through intuitive self-discovery and inwardness and outwardness at the same time. So I think that what we have been trying to do is to try to negotiate this idea of the past and the future. You know, reminiscing about the past or preserving the past or preparing for the future or hope for the future. And in the midst of all this, the present is compromised. And so so I would like to say that I am an artist that don't want to tell stories. I'm tired of telling stories. I have told so many stories from my life and they're amusing stories because I didn't have a normal life, but I'm ready to be the story. I want to be the living story. And this is what my creative approach is that I have put together through the past 25 years, kind of organically formed to be my own way of doing things. It's called Living Stories, and it's to find the present in the, it's to find the past in the present moment. You know, and if we do that, we will welcome the future anyways.
You have a quintet of dance. I think there's five performers on stage and you're on stage as well.
They're quartet and
a quartet.
Me.
And you yourself. Is it complicated to explain, you know, this idea of not telling a story, but being this story? How do you convey that, really get it into the bones of your performers?
Fortunately, I have four beautiful performers, as I said, very diverse. Mairead Philgate, who lives in Montreal, Katya Wittenborn and Tanvir Alam, who are from Montreal and living in Toronto and at the moment, and then Ethan Kim. So these four are very generous in taking up a challenge, and it's my work wouldn't work if there is no challenge and contradiction. We are dealing with contradiction on stage. We are negotiating this idea of experiencing versus performance, you know, and what does that mean? We are doing a ritual, so we are hoping that we will attempt to experience this ritual on stage in front of the witnesses and don't look at them as audience and invite them not to be sitting there to audit us, but to actually witness us. And for us, it's a great opportunity to take our hard work in front of a test to see if having those people there will encourage us to do what our trained body wants us to do, to perform. And if how much we can unlearn that trained body and be our natural body and experience what we do.
So Shar, knowing all this and how much thought you've put into what this performance is, how do you expect your audiences to arrive? Like what should people be primed to experience or be thinking about when they enter the performance space?
I only wish for one thing. I wish, there are many ways to heaven. So everybody can experience it in different ways. As a proverb says, a Kirkus proverb says, running water is fresh. Mundane water is contaminated. So as long as we are running water, let alone if you're an artist or an audience, and we are trying to experience every moment in life in a different way and be that running water and come into experiencing our performance with that openness and no expectations, I think that would be enough for me.
Wow, that leaves me with a lot of food for thought. So Shar, it's been such a pleasure getting to know you. Thank you so much for making time for Upstage.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you very much.
That was choreographer Sashar Zarif. His new show is Kismet. It opened last night at the Mai and continues tonight to the weekend. We are hearing some of the music from the show here. To book your tickets and learn more, visit the Mai box office online at m-a-i.qc.ca or call 514-982-3386. And you can also visit Sashar and his company at sashardance.weebly.com. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week.
Odessa, the last goodbye tour, live in Montreal. Odessa, see them performing for the first time in over 3 years. Parc Jean-Drapeau, Friday, September 2nd. Odessa, with special guests, Sylvan Esso, Elderbrook, and Nasiah. Get tickets this Friday at 10 a.m. at thevenco.ca. The brand new album, The Last Goodbye, is available everywhere July 22nd. For more, check odessa.com.
I would love to have a peek inside Cédric Delorme Bouchard's brain. And I came pretty close to that this week. Not only is Cédric a theater director, but he is also a set and lighting designer, and his work has traveled to 15 countries around the world. He also founded his own company, Chambre Noire. Maybe you've seen some of his work at Usine C. So when Cédric imagines a play, he's not just thinking of the story and the performers, but how the set and the lighting will help shape that story. And a new world began to unfold when he picked up a book called The Employees. It is by Danish writer Olga Raven, set in the future on a spaceship owned by a powerful corporation. And when objects start to go missing, there are startling implications for the humans on board, as well as the not-so-human employees. Someone Call HR is a futuristic office drama. You are hearing some of the score by Simon Gauthier for the show here. Cédric co-adapted the thriller with William Durbeau in addition to designing the lighting and scenography. The show opens at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine next week on April 7th. It's called Les Employés, and there is one presentation in English. And Cédric is excited to present his work to an Anglophone audience. I spoke with director Cédric yesterday. Bienvenue, Cédric, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So your play or your show here, the present one that we're going to be talking about, is actually based on a bit of what sounds like science fiction to me. Can you tell me about Olga Raven's novel?
Yeah, she's a writer, and the one of the book she wrote and I choose to create my next show for Théâtre La Chapelle is called The Employees, and it's really a unusual, I say, start for a theater show. I mean, science fiction is often used in cinema, TV series, but it's not often that we start from those kind of literature to create theater or dance project. It's really an unusual choice. At the first time I read this book, I knew at the third page that this was the next project I want to create. So it's an incredible, incredible novel. Actually, she's a young writer, Olga Ravn, and I think it's her second book, and she's already well known in Denmark, where she's from. And it's the story of the novel, it's we follow the crew of the 6,000 ships, so spaceship, of a powerful space corporation. So it's a universe of extreme capitalism, but in a distant future. And the crew is composed of human and humanoid. So humanoid are almost like normal human. I mean, they are of flesh and blood, but they are created in laboratory to be kind of, well, it's the work for the human, and they are the working labor class of this this future. So through the different story, because the novel give different point of view. So it's like really small text of one pages or two pages only. And that give us the perspective of different crew member of this ship. So maybe we pass 100 different crew member in the novel. So I found the writing style of Olga really, really incredible. She have an incredible writing. The story she create is completely outstanding. And this idea of having access to the thought of so many different people on this ship, that's really an interesting point to start the creation of a play. So as I said, at the first couple of pages I read, I knew this need to be translate into a way for living arts.
I'm glad that you mentioned right off the top that it's kind of unusual to see science fiction being adapted. And that's kind of where I wanted to start with Olga's novel, because in all my years covering theater, it's not often that you read, you know, this is based on a novel set in the future aboard a spaceship. I think I could count on my hands the number of science fiction shows I've seen. So when you picked up this book, a sophomore novel by a young Danish writer, you know, did you have in mind, like, I'm wondering, like, where you look for inspiration, having worked on so many shows? You know, do you pick up a book and have an open mind that this might be your next project? Or did it kind of take you by surprise that you started thinking, I can put this together on stage?
Yeah, I think I'm always aware that I'm searching. Of course, when I read, sometimes I read a book and I'm simply enjoying the book, but I know it was not written for me. It's not something that I will use to create something, a show. But I can enjoy, I still can enjoy to read this book. But sometimes when I fell on something that I really feel that there's a strong connection, that this writing style is going to connect with my kind of direction I want for theater. So yeah, I'm always a little searching for the next project. But when I found a text that feel like there's something to create with that, it's really, really fast and direct. That, and it was this feeling for the Olga novel. And of course, it's true science fiction. It's not something that we are used to see on stage. And also, there's my practice of theater director is really influenced by the set design, also because I'm set designer and light designer, and all the show that I'm directing, I always create the light and the set design also. For me, the directing, of course, there are different way to see this, but for me, directing a show is to create a complete universe. And this universe, of course, use the word and the actor and the body also. But it's also taking shape in a place, a space, and taking form by the light also, and the music. Even if I'm not composing the music myself, I work really closely with all the other creator of the show. That could seem like, yeah, it's normal, but no, it's something that I when I rehearse for a project, for me, working with the actor or working with the composer or working with the costume designer is as much important, because every piece of the puzzle need to be perfectly put together. So that's maybe another thing, that when I see this futuristic universe that the Olga describe, of course it can't only be represented by the actor and the text. There need to be something else to make us not completely see this universe, but make us see a part of it, or make us be able to imagine the rest of this universe. So I say that I was working at the same time I read the employees on a light installation, set design, a design with only made with laser and hologram almost in smoke. And when I found the book, I knew those two projects need to be only one,
yeah,
and need to merge together. So the adaptation of the novel was made at the same time I was designing the set design and the installation of lasers. So it's only one thing at the end that the audience is going to be presented to. It's one object that merged the text, that merged the actor, and that merged the light of the laser.
I'm speaking with Cédric Delhomme-Bouchard, who is the director and the set and lighting designer of the new show, Les Employés. It's based on a second novel by a young Danish writer, Olga Raven, who situates it on a spaceship traveling full through space. But it's actually run by a space exploration company, not by, I guess, in the future. Sometimes we see spaceships that are run by corporations, and sometimes they're kind of run by kind of what you would imagine to be Yeti nations of the world or something like that. But that's the world Olga has written. Cédric is interpreting it. You've talked a little bit about bringing your design expert to the fore, your design expertise, so that you really visualize a play when you imagine directing it, which is a fascinating process in my mind. I'm wondering for you, like, you talked a little bit about lasers, but is it hard to bring science fiction to the stage? Is it hard to make it believable? Because as we were saying, it's not very typical to see that in live theater.
Yeah, this novel is quite a challenge to transpose for the staging, for the stage. But at the same time, I think every project, and I really like play or text or novel that represent a real challenge to create, to that you can't only assume that you are going to use the same recipe that you use for the show. No, you have to invent a kind of new system. Of course, nothing is always completely new, but there's no other project on which I worked before that is exactly like this one. There's a new set of rules that need to be created to make this futuristic universe to appear on stage. So yeah, that could be a little difficult with this novel, but I think that's something that is like, it's like that for almost all interesting projects.
Right.
There's a challenge to find the way to make this believable and to make this interesting.
And I can't help but feel like, because you're already doing the lighting and the set design, you already have an idea in mind. You're consulting with yourself as designer and the director to what your vision is going to look like. You're not relying on someone else's vision, which is what you would normally be doing. It's all up here. It's all in your head.
The staging process is as much as working with the actor on the text, as working with the choreographer on the movement, as working with the light, because the same movement in different light is not going to give the same effect, the same images. So all of the pieces of the puzzle need to be put together almost at the same time. So it's a big landscape, visual and soundscape, that is created at the same time by putting all of those pieces together and by working with all the team also at the same time together. So I could not say exactly if it's more a dance show or a theater show, a visual set design and light show. It's all of that at the same time. So it's a multidisciplinary creation.
Speaking with Cédric Delorme-Bouchard, who is the director, as well as the set and lighting designer for Les Employés, coming to La Chapelle Saint-Contemporaine this April. And it is about a science fiction novel, based on a science fiction novel by Danish writer Olga Raven. Now, there will be three presentations in French and one in English, which is kind of cool. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I used to direct show in French normally, or show without words. I mean, I worked really closely with the dance scene also. So some of my creation are more about theater, and other are more about dance or movement or image theaters. So in this case, by presenting the show at La Chapelle, and La Chapelle is a theater that is well known for its close connection as much with the French audience and the French character than the English audience and English creators. So I find it's important. I mean, there's a lot of show at La Chapelle that present a project with subtitle, but in my case, I really, I'm not a big fan of subtitle, and especially not for a project like The Employees, because the visual, the importance of the darkness and to control the lights for every scene is super important to give a complete experience. So to project subtitles doesn't make sense. So I offered to La Chapelle that we could create one representation completely in English. So we work with we translate the entire of the text to create an English version of the novel and an English version of the adaptation. And we also work with a different crew of actors for this show, because there's one other things to maybe to understand the project. But there's actor on stage, but they're also actor that are not on stage and have been recorded in the studio before. So we did this with 13 French actor, and we did it again with 13 English actor. So the show, this only representation is in English. It's a lot of work for only one night, but at the same time it's a first connection with the English audience. So I'm really really looking to meet new spectators that are not didn't know my work like the French audience.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful outreach for you to be able to do, is to find a new audience like this. Is there the possibility that the show will be able to hit the road and be performed elsewhere where there ain't, you know, in a bilingual city as bilingual as Montreal, yeah, and the rest of Canada?
Yeah, absolutely, because the project, as I said, it's an incredible sound design with all of those voices recorded and specialized in the theater. So for the actor that are on stage, we can switch to the French sound design or the English sound design, and for them the choreography, the movement, the staging, it's all stay the same. So that's the particularity of the project that makes this possible. So it's possible for La Chapelle, but it might be possible for the future also to travel without, because that's a problem with the theater that we don't have with the dance. It's the language. There's place we can go and there's place we can't, because we don't. So by being able to switch from French to English, we have a really possibility of traveling with this project. So yeah, it's really a possibility for the future.
That was Cédric Delorme-Bouchard, director and designer of Les Employés, a book by Danish writer Olga Raven, which he co-adapted and brings to the stage starting April 7th to the 12th at La Chapelle Saint-Contemporaine. Most of the performances will be in French, but Monday, April 11th will be an English performance. You are hearing some of the score here by Simon Gauthier. For tickets and more information, visit lachapelle.org, email beatrice@lachapelle.org, or call 514-843-7738. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Tonight you heard Steppers Montreal founder Kyan Quealy. Their new show is at the Siegel Center this Saturday. Choreographer Sashar Zarif, new show Kismet at the Mai tonight and this weekend. And of course, Cédric Delorme-Bouchard, who directs Les Employés at La Chapelle, April 7th. A very big thank you to my guests. And a reminder, if you would like free tickets to see Montreal Steppers in action this Saturday at the Siegel, please drop me a line. I'm giving away tickets to both performances at 4 and 8 p.m. Please email me your time preference, name, and phone number at upstage@ckut.ca by 10 a.m. tomorrow, Friday. I will confirm if you have won by end of day. Thank you to Kyan at Montreal Steppers for this wonderful opportunity. To learn more, visit the troupe at montrealsteppers.com. And if you'd like to book your tickets, visit SiegelCenter.org. But why book when you can win a pair? You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
Welcome to the September 30th issue of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, for today's Day of Truth and Reconciliation, we're going to start a series of documentaries produced by the National Campus Community Radio Association and their sister member stations. Tonight we'll be playing a documentary produced by CFBX-FM from Kamloops, BC, entitled Law, Land, Language, Resonating Reconciliation. It was produced by Amy Jones, Arthur Manuel, and Chris Abinabi. So here's tonight's lecture on Grey Matters, Law, Land, Language, Resonating Reconciliation. Here it is.
My name's Chris Abinabi. I work at CFBX 92.5 FM in Kamloops.
And I'm Amy Jones from Suquamish Ulu and the Okanagan.
So how are you feeling, Amy?
Good.
Good. It's the last day, right? This is the final piece of our documentary that we've been working on all summer.
Yeah.
And it feels good. We just voiced the script and we're putting it all together. How do you feel?
I'm excited to get it done and more so to get the word out there, because we are at critical times where more people need to know what's going on in their territory and to do their part and seek that knowledge too. Because everything's just not brought to them. People have to go out there and seek the state of their land, or, you know.
And that has been the focus of this documentary that you're about to hear. And here it is. Support for this project comes from the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and the Department of Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Canada. If you are triggered by the contents of this documentary,